Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
He's back after 1 year and 7 months in detention, in Israeli detention, after torture. We got detained with each other, but now I got released, and now after 1 year and 7 months, he's back again home.
Al Jazeera reporter Ibrahim Al-Khalili, reunited with his brother Mohammed, released last week by Israel as part of the Gaza ceasefire deal that saw nearly 2,000 Palestinians released. Today, Ibrahim joins us from Gaza for the latest as Israeli attacks have killed 40 Palestinians Sunday and nearly 100 since the Trump-backed truce went into effect. Then some 7 million people march at No Kings rallies across the United States. We'll hear voices from the streets of Washington, D.C.
I'm here because I'm a federal worker who's furloughed, who's been fired under this administration, and whose agency had been shut down way before the current shutdown. So I'm here to make sure that we make our voices heard, because federal workers want to work. We want to serve the people. We need to make it clear that we can't have an authoritarian government, a government that's turned into nothing but a weapon.
Finally, to California, where immigrant rights activist labor icon Dolores Huerta addressed the No Kings rally in Watsonville.
People here that are right now being arrested, deported, and terrorized, they are not immigrants. They are the indigenous people of the continent. The real immigrants to the United States came from Europe, right?
Yeah. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. An estimated 7 million people took part in No Kings rallies Saturday to protest President Trump's embrace of authoritarianism. Organizers say protests were held in over 2,600 cities, towns, villages across all 50 states in what was one of the largest days of protests in U.S. history, surpassing the first No Kings Day of action in June. In Chicago, the protests stretched for 2 miles as about a quarter of a million people took to the streets. Chicago Mayor Brendan Johnson addressed the crowd, calling for a general strike. An estimated 200,000 rallied in Washington, D.C. Senator Bernie Sanders addressed the crowd.
This moment is not just about one man's greed, one man's corruption, or one man's contempt for the Constitution. This is about a handful of the wealthiest people on earth, who in their insatiable greed have hijacked our economy and our political system in order to enrich themselves at the expense of working families throughout this country.
At a No Kings rally in Atlanta, Georgia, speakers included former gubernatorial candidate, voting rights activist Stacey Abrams.
And yet we are living in a moment where ethno-fascists are in charge of the government, when Christian nationalists are making economic policy, when we have a secret police telling us who we are. Their destination is division. Their destination is destruction. And their destination is denied. We will not go back, and we will not let them turn us around.
President Trump responded to the No Kings protest by posting an AI-generated video that showed him wearing a crown, flying a jet labeled King Trump. In the video, Trump is seen dumping feces on the heads of protesters from the plane. Trump has also repeated his threat to investigate billionaire philanthropist George Soros, who Trump claimed had helped fund the No Kings protests, which attracted massive crowds despite attempts by House Speaker Mike Johnson and other Republicans to label the protest as a hate America rally. Israel carried out a wave of deadly attacks in Gaza over the weekend and temporarily halted aid deliveries. But Israel's now saying it will resume enforcement of the U.S. brokered ceasefire. Israel had accused Hamas of killing two Israeli soldiers in Rafah, but there are reports the soldiers died when their bulldozer ran over unexploded ordnance. Officials in Gaza say Israel's killed at least 97 Palestinians and injured 230 since the ceasefire went into effect October 10th. On Friday, Israeli forces fired a tank shell, killing 11 members of a Palestinian family in the Zaytun neighborhood of Gaza City. The dead included three women and seven children between the ages of 5 and 13. Israel also bombed the headquarters of the Palestine Media Production Company in central Gaza, killing broadcast engineer Ahmed Amu Matar. His colleague Ajib Mohammed described the attack.
We were sitting here safe and sound, and as you can see, the place is closed off to us. No one enters or leaves. We are all journalists. No strangers were entering or staying with us. Then the bombing happened, right next to us, in the middle of the chalet. Our colleague, the broadcasting engineer, was martyred, and our colleague's child's son was also martyred.
On the diplomatic front, President Trump's special envoy Steve Witkoff and Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner have returned to Israel ahead of Vice President J.D. Vance's trip to Israel. President Trump says the government will send National Guard troops to San Francisco and may invoke the Insurrection Act to do it. It comes as President Trump asked the Supreme Court Friday to allow him to send National Guard to the Chicago area by lifting lower court orders blocking the deployment. Meanwhile, seven officials in Tennessee are suing the Trump administration for sending the National Guard to Memphis. The lawsuit, backed by the nonprofit Democracy Forward, says, quote, "Our nation's founders recognized military rule was incompatible with liberty and democracy. The facts on the ground cannot justify defendants' overreach," unquote. Meanwhile, Vermont's Republican Governor Phil Scott blasted Trump's deployment of National Guard troops to Chicago and Portland, calling it unconstitutional, following Oklahoma's Republican Governor Kevin Stitt criticizing the deployment of Texas National Guard to Illinois. Stitt is the head of the National Governors Association. The federal government shutdown has entered its 20th day. Senate Democrats proposed a bill last week to keep funding the government through October 31st, reversing cuts to Medicaid and extending Affordable Care Act subsidies. But that measure failed to garner a veto-proof majority of 60 votes. It comes as President Trump's tried to lay off thousands of furloughed workers, but that move was temporarily halted by the courts. President Trump is threatening to cut off foreign aid to Colombia and raise tariffs on Colombian goods after the Colombian president, Gustavo Petro, condemned the U.S. for blowing up boats in the Caribbean, many off the coast of Venezuela. In recent weeks, the U.S. has blown up at least seven boats, alleging without proof they were used for drug trafficking. Petro accused the U.S. of killing innocent Colombians. Trump responded by calling Petro a, quote, "illegal drug leader," unquote. Petro then responded by writing, quote, "trying to promote peace in Colombia is not being a drug trafficker," unquote. Meanwhile, the U.S. has repatriated two people from Ecuador and Colombia who survived a deadly U.S. strike on a vessel last week. This all comes as President Trump is threatening to begin launching attacks inside Venezuela, despite reports Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has offered to give the U.S. a stake in Venezuela's oil wealth and other natural resources. Trump was asked about this on Friday at the White House and responded by using an expletive to warn Venezuela.
Offering mediation? What should we do to stop that?
He has offered everything. He's offered everything. You're right. You know why? Because he doesn't want to around with the United States.
Trump has admitted that the United States has launched a covert CIA operation in Venezuela. In Bolivia, Senator Rodrigo Paz won Sunday's presidential election, defeating another right-wing candidate, former President Jorge Tuto Quiroga. Paz's election marks the end of 20 years of rule in Bolivia by MAS, the Movement Towards Socialism Party, which first came to power in 2006 with the election of Evo Morales. Rodrigo Paz is the son of the former Bolivian president, Jaime Paz Zamora. Ukrainian drones struck a major gas processing plant in southern Russia Sunday, sparking a fire. It follows an explosive White House meeting Friday between Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and President Trump that reportedly descended into a shouting match where Trump pressured Zelensky to accept Russia's terms for ending the war. Trump also refused Ukraine's request for long-range Tomahawk missiles. Trump reportedly told Zelensky, quote, "If Putin wants it, he will destroy you," unquote. Speaking to reporters, Trump referred to Ukraine's Donbas region as cut up, urging Ukraine to, quote, "leave it the way it is right now," unquote, which would essentially mean ceding territory to Russia. It comes as Trump and Putin are set to meet in Budapest in the coming weeks. Prince Andrew has announced he's giving up his royal title as ahead of the publication of an explosive book by Jeffrey Epstein survivor Virginia Giuffre. In her book, Nobody's Girl, a memoir of surviving abuse and fighting for justice, Giuffre details how she was forced to have sex with Prince Andrew, beginning when she was 17 years old. She also said she was beaten and raped by a, quote, "well-known prime minister," unquote. In the book, Giuffre also details how she was recruited to work for Epstein by Ghislaine Maxwell, who met her at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort, where both Giuffre and her father worked. The Metropolitan Police in London are investigating claims Prince Andrew tried to ask his bodyguard to obtain personal information about Giuffre before a photo of the two of them, including Maxwell, was released to the public. A British government minister said that leaked emails show Prince Andrew had passed on Giuffre's date of birth and social security to his bodyguard. Virginia Giuffre died reportedly by suicide earlier this year in Australia. Vermont State Senator Republican Samuel Douglas announced his resignation after it was revealed he was involved in the exchange of racist and anti-Semitic messages with other young Republican leaders. Douglas was the only elected official in the chat. Last Friday, the New York GOP officials voted to suspend its Young Republican chapter. In one message, the chair of the New York State Young Republicans, Peter Gunta, wrote, quote, "I love Hitler." President Trump commuted the 7-year sentence of former Republican George Santos. Santos was expelled from Congress in 2023 and pleaded guilty earlier this year to wire fraud and identity theft, including lying to Congress, stealing money from campaign donors, and fraudulently collecting unemployment benefits. Trump's decision to commute Santos promoted outrage from other lawmakers, including Republicans. New York Republican Congressmember Nick Loda wrote on X, "George Santos didn't merely lie. He stole millions, defrauded an election, and his crimes for which he pled guilty warrant more than a 3-month sentence," unquote. In one of his first interviews since being released, Santos said he's now free to get Botox. A 5-day strike organized by tens of thousands of Kaiser Permanente nurses and other frontline medical staff in California, Hawaii, and Oregon has ended. No agreements reportedly been reached, but the union representing the healthcare workers said there's, quote, new momentum to begin negotiations. The union's requesting salary increase of 25% over 4 years. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Gaza, where repeated Israeli attacks have killed nearly 100 Palestinians and wounded over 200 since a Trump-backed ceasefire deal went into effect over a week ago. On Friday, Israeli military forces opened fire at a civilian bus, killing 11 members of a Palestinian family attempting to return home into Gaza City. Among the Abu Shaban family victims were seven children between the ages of 5 and 13, an attack many have decried as the deadliest truce violation yet. Israel also bombed the headquarters of the Palestine Media Production Company in central Gaza, killing the broadcast engineer Ahmed Abu Matar. Israel accused Hamas of killing two Israeli soldiers in Rafah, but Hamas says there are reports the soldiers died when their bulldozer ran over unexploded ordnance and that they're not active in Rafah. Gaza officials report Israel's breached the fragile U.S. brokered agreement some 80 times. Despite the wave of Israeli strikes this weekend, President Trump said the ceasefire is still in place. Israel's also continued to hinder the flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza, again suspending the entrance of aid over the weekend. But Israeli officials are now saying aid distribution in Gaza and the ceasefire have resumed. This all comes as more Palestinians recently released from Israeli prisons have described torture while in Israeli jails. In a minute, we'll be joined by Al Jazeera reporter Ibrahim Al-Khalili, who reunited with his brother Mohammed last week. After Mohammed was released following 19 months in Israeli prison, this is his report on Al Jazeera, his brother held without charge.
He's my brother. He's back after 1 year and 7 months in detention, in Israeli detention after torture. We got detained with each other, but now I got released. And now after 1 year and 7 months, he's back again home.
Mohammed, how was the situation in prison after they detained you?
It was a big struggle. We were beaten and humiliated in wrong ways. We suffered a lot.
My brother is so tired. He needs to be back home again. But I can now say the war has really came to an end.
Last month, Al Jazeera reporter Ibrahim Al-Khalili was on air when he broke the news of Israeli forces killing his own family members in Gaza.
I'm here today reporting from Gaza's Al Daraj neighborhood, east of Gaza City, where deadly Israeli airstrike flattened this complete residential block behind me. Many Palestinians have been confirmed killed, and at least 50 Palestinians are still trapped under the rubble. Tragically, many of my close relatives were among those killed in this airstrike. It came without any prior warning at midnight while people slept. This block used to shelter at least 100 Palestinians, and they sought refuge here, believing that this residential neighborhood is safe, but they ended up being targeted and brutally killed. This area once meant to be a place of refuge for many Palestinian families now has become a site of death and massive destruction. It has turned into a mass graveyard for Palestinians in the light of the unprecedented escalation of Israeli attacks targeting towers, residential blocks, and shelter schools, killing many Palestinians and leaving thousands with nowhere to run. Ibrahim Khalili, Al Jazeera, Gaza City, Palestine.
We now go to Gaza, where Al Jazeera reporter Ibrahim Al-Khalili is joining us from Al-Shifa Hospital. Ibrahim, welcome to Democracy Now! I want to start with your first report. I watched it live on Al Jazeera when you reunited with your brother. Talk about why he was jailed, how long he was jailed.
Yes, first of all, thank you for having me. My brother Mohammed, the oldest brother in my family, was detained on the 18th of March 2024 around the Shifa Medical Complex where my family used to live. So that day, the Israeli military stormed a Shifa hospital at midnight without any prior warning, and loudspeakers started saying, don't move, the area is under extreme siege. Don't move, the army is operating in your area. And just basically don't move. I was with my whole family inside my house at that time. So the Israeli military, in the morning after midnight, they stormed my house, and then they took us all out, forced us into the freezing cold, and we were forcibly stripped of our clothes in the freezing weather after interrogation and torture and harsh circumstances in that harsh weather. I was released, but my brother Muhammad was detained, and since that day, during that time, we did not know anything about his whereabouts. So he was detained by the Israeli military when the Israeli military operation assault on a Shifa medical complex came to an end. We returned back to our homes to find nothing. We have not found my brother Muhammad or the house even standing. So after 19 months in Israeli detention, my brother Muhammad got released, and we met up in Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. And this is a very historic moment for us, the Palestinians, and for my family in particular, to have my brother back after 19 months in Israeli jail. As I talked to my brother Muhammad, he's tired now. He was telling me he was under extreme torture and interrogation and harsh circumstances in Israeli prisons. He lost almost 30 kilos. He was almost 100 kilograms, but his weight dropped to 70 kilograms during the 19 months of detention. So this tells the whole story about the torture, interrogation, and the extreme harsh conditions all Palestinians go through in the Israeli prisons. They go well, and they just release with a unhealthy, whether mentally or physically. So we are all lucky now to have my brother Muhammad back home to his four beautiful children and his wife, who have been waiting for him for so long. And the sense of relief and joy, happiness inside the family prevailed after they got their loved ones, Muhammad, back home after 19 months in Israeli detention. So this is a historic moment, not for me in particular. We're talking about 1,700 prisoners were released in that after the ceasefire took effect. And now these families are happy, and they expressed a lot of joy to have their loved ones back to Gaza City after spending years under severe and harsh conditions in Israeli jails. The situation for other prisoners who are still remain trapped inside Israeli prisons are very dire. Let's just focus on these and mention these to our viewers, that Palestinian prisoners are enduring harsh realities in terms of the lack of basic necessities. As I talked to my brother Muhammad, he was having just two meals a day, and they are not sufficient, and they are not high in proteins to help these Palestinian prisoners survive the next day. And yes, the situation remains dire. Whether for the released Palestinians, they endured a lot of harsh memories in Israeli jails that last for them even after they got released from Israeli prisons. And we just focus on the Palestinian prisoners who are still held in detention. And worth mentioning, to remind our viewers, that my brother Muhammad was held without any charge. He was not affiliated to any political group whatsoever. So they detained him without any legal reason for him to be detained by the Israeli military and to endure all what he has been through during the 19 months in Israeli prison. These are the harsh realities Palestinian prisoners face during their time of detention in Israeli prisons. And I talked to many prisoners, and I filmed with a prisoner who just was released after the ceasefire and the war ended. He came back home to find his family members all wiped out of civil registry. 400 family members of that prisoner were killed in Israel's war, and there are many, many stories, as well as another prisoner who's Mahmoud Abu Ful, who got his legs amputated previously before the war, and he was detained in Kamal Adwan Hospital, and after interrogation and torture, he lost sight. He can't see in his both eyes after the torture that he has endured in Israeli prisons. And as we continue to speak with many prisoners, the same story repeats itself of torture and circumstances and lack of basic necessities. This is the harsh reality that we Palestinians all go through. Even me, when I was detained, they claim that I belong to a political group, which is not true. And the serious allegations and accusations against us Palestinians, and we are ordinary civilians living in Gaza City, and they still accuse us of something we don't belong to. They just make accusations about us so that they can just create some sort of an environment or a reason to detain us and torture us in very harsh conditions and circumstances. And the situation also remains dire in Gaza City. The government media office states that Israel committed 47 breaches. Israel is breaching the ceasefire multiple times. Like, we're talking about 47 times when Israel committed a violation in the ceasefire. And this is something we also endure. Like, yesterday, Israeli military targeted different sites and locations here in Gaza City. And many, many families who returned to Gaza City after the first phase of the ceasefire took effect. They found nothing but rubble. They returned to a wasteland. And then seeing that Israel resumed or violate the ceasefire yesterday and started to hit different sites and locations. One of the targeted sites were in southeast Gaza City, where 11 family members were targeted without any sort of warning. The Israeli military should have just issued warning to these families, like, you are, for example, being in a dangerous zone. But instead, they ended up being targeted and brutally killed. Another attack in Zawaida area, south of the Gaza Strip, at least 3 Palestinians were killed in a coffee shop without any prior warning. This is a serious violation for a ceasefire to witness as Palestinians. And like many people have believed that the war has really came to an end. But with these violations that are being committed by the Israeli military on a daily basis, creates a sense of uncertainty for hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who wished once that the war will end and they came back to their homeland and the areas they once called home. And we're talking about the destruction of much of Gaza's residential neighborhoods. And these neighborhoods are not just the loss of a property. They are they represent the loss of memories in the homeland, which thousands of Palestinians once called home, but they returned to find nothing but rubble and violations and the lack of basic necessities to help these families who return to Gaza City to survive the next day. The situation is getting much more dire. The war has not really ended for hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who are still struggling to survive the next day with the lack of basic necessities and the restrictions imposed on Gaza's border crossings, whether to get the medical supplies and basic necessities, food, water, and whatsoever. At the same time, Israeli military continues to restrict the borders for patients. Hundreds of patients are waiting for Gaza's border crossings to be opened and reopened again so that they can get the proper medication they urgently need. As I talk to doctors, medicine and medical equipment are not even available in Gaza to just conduct such operations for chronic diseases patients. So they need the borders to be open again so that they can survive and get the urgent treatment they need abroad. And we have talked about this many, many, many times, about the restrictions of the borders to allow aid in to Gaza.